6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hello and welcome to Ghost in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today we have Scott Sukol. Scott is the former ghost hunt manager at the Ohio State Reformatory. He's a paranormal investigator since 1993. Scott has been called on to consult on numerous investigations around the world. He has investigated for celebrities and he has assisted the Catholic Church. I'll be right back with my conversation with Scott Sukol right after these brief messages.
Hey, I'm your host, Wendy, and you just listened to another episode of A Juicy Pear Podcast. Thanks for listening to the show. I really appreciate it. And I would love it if you could subscribe, rate, and leave a review. Each week, I have new content, and I love talking with creatives. Tell your friends and family. And if you're feeling led, hey, you can buy me a coffee on ajuicypearpodcast.com.
Well, today I have Scott Sukol on the show. Scott is a former ghost hunt manager at the Ohio State Reformatory, a paranormal investigator since 1993. Scott has been called in to consult on numerous investigations around the world. He has investigated for celebrities and has assisted the Catholic Church. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I'm trying to survive this Ohio, whatever it's called, coming up through here.
Oh, yeah. We just got over the last storm, didn't we?
Well, anyway, I'm welcoming you to the show. I have tons of questions, and hopefully we can get through all of these on the short time we have together here tonight. Before we get into everything I just said you have accomplished, what got you interested in the paranormal field?
Well, when I was young, I always, you know, saw stuff, picked stuff up, and I was probably about, 10 or 11, maybe 12, and I was walking back from the woods. We have a big piece of property here, and I was walking back from the woods, and it was my my grandparents' property. I was walking past the barn. I started noticing that there were a bunch of like old cars from like the 50s and 60s driving down the road, and around here a lot of the towns have car shows. So I'm thinking, maybe there's a car show in like Medina or something like that, which is a town around here. So I'm just watching these cars and walking down to the house past a barn, and I see somebody walking up the hill towards me. It's just like somebody walking towards me. The guy says, "Hey, Scotty, how you doing?" "I'm doing pretty good. I'm just coming back from the woods." "All right. Well, you have a good day." I get down to the house and it doesn't dawn on me until I get into the house that was my grandfather. He passed away when I was one. So that was one of the things that happened to me when I was young. So I've always had an interest, but when I hit my teens and all that stuff, the interest sort of faded. Yeah, and then there were some things that happened to me later on in the years, probably, I don't know, 1992, it reignited my interest. Back in those days, it wasn't like now where you just, you know, Google, you know, paranormal group or, you know, parapsychologist near me. Mm-hmm. Back then, it was very underground. Because, I mean, nobody really talked about it, because if you talked about it, you were, you know, considered an occultist or a Satan worshiper or whatever.
Right.
So I ended up through, I believe it was AOL Messenger, met a guy that only lives about a half hour from me. And he had been doing it since the 70s. So we met and he essentially became my Mr. Miyagi in the paranormal field. So, yeah, it's just been, you know, game on since, well, 1993.
Yeah, see here that, well, my next question was, how old were you when you had your first paranormal experience? So I think you just answered, what, 11 years old?
Yeah, so like 10 or 11, something like that.
Yeah, that's about the same age I was. I was probably 12 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. And back then, you know, I mean, who do you go to for what you just seen with about being called crazy?
Exactly. Yep.
Being a paranormal investigator, do you do it as a team or do you go out solo?
Very rarely do I go out as a team. Even if I do to go to a location with several people, 99% of the time I just break off from the group, because I have far more experiences when I am alone. Uh-huh. Now, I know a lot of people say, oh, you know, you should always walk around with, you know, at least one other person so they can cooperate. Like if you have an experience and they have an experience at the same time, it, you know, lends more credibility. Well, you know what? I don't care about the credibility part of it anymore. I'm not trying to prove anything to anybody. So I want to, if I'm working a case, I want to get down to the bottom of the case. Doing it alone, you know, investigating alone seems to work a hell of a lot better for me than walking around with, you know, X amount of people.
First of all, let me say to my listeners that you are from Medina, Ohio, and you're only, what, 25, 30 miles from me, I guess, you know, maybe 15
yeah.
from Trumbull County. And I was doing some background research on you. And I came across when you said you were in a building and there was a demon in the attic and two demons in the basement.
Yep.
Do you want to explain that?
This was, oh God, this had to be 2006, maybe. I was called in by a group out of Iowa to come investigate this location to get my take on it. Essentially, what I think they wanted me to do was go in there and say, oh, yeah, you know, what you guys think it is, it is. Because they're talking about, you know, a demon in the attic and two in the basement and all this stuff. And the leader of the group, he at that time was what I would consider almost like a not to be disrespectful, but like a second class paranormal celebrity. He was well known in the field at that time. So I ended up driving out to this one was actually in Missouri. So I show up there and I mean, it's a really cool old building. It was a brothel at one time. It was a, you know, stagecoach stop, you know, all of these buildings seem to have the same history. It was a brothel, it was stagecoach stop, da da da, da whatever. Uh-huh. So I get there and there are this like second rate paranormal celebrity. There was his group. There were nine of them. And there was me. So the guy, we're all standing out front. He laid out the ground rules. It was, nobody goes upstairs in the attic. Nobody goes in the building alone. And if you go in the basement, you have to go with the entire group. It is that dangerous in here. All right, whatever. We all had to enter the building because we got there at about 3 o'clock. We all entered the building at the same time because we had to open up the windows to let some of the, I don't know if it was the hot air out of the building or the hot air into the building. I don't know. It was the middle of Missouri in August. I don't know if you've ever been in Missouri in August.
No, I haven't.
Don't. Just don't. So we're all walking through there and all that stuff and opening up windows, and they're talking about how dangerous it is in here and all that from all the demonic activity. We finally get all the windows open, and then we go outside again, and we're all just talking outside in front of the building. Man, I'd been driving like 13 hours before I got there. So I really had a pee. So I'm like, is there somewhere I can like take a piss? And they're like, well, you can go behind the building. All right, cool. So I go behind the building. I do my business. And then when I turn around, I notice that there's a door right there. So me, being inquisitive such as I am, I had to go into the building alone. So I'm just walking around this building. It had a full basement, three stories, and an attic. The attic that nobody goes in. So I'm walking around the first floor. They don't know I'm in there. Nothing really going on the first floor. I go up to the second floor. I get a little, a little buzz of, yeah, there's something going on. Go up onto the third floor, and down at the end of the hall, yeah, there was something going on down there. But while I'm up on the third floor, I notice this another doorway. It looked like it was probably like one of those 23 or 24 inch doors in like really old buildings. So I open it up, and there's a staircase. The staircase must lead up to the attic that nobody's allowed in, because that's where Satan lives or something. Uh-huh. So of course, I take my chubby bald ass up there. So when I go up there, there is just this little girl standing in the corner, just like when you're around a normal kid. At that age, you like kneel down, get on their level and everything. I said, I'm not here to hurt you. She said, they always yell at me. And I said, don't listen to them. They're idiots. And I said, just stay up here. You'll be fine. Then I noticed in the front of the attic, there's a doorway leading out to a balcony. Well, the balcony just so happens to be right above where the group was, standing outside. So I open the doors. I step out onto the balcony, which, thinking back now, I don't know if that was a smart move, just because building was built in the 1850s and I wasn't really sure about the sturdiness of the balcony. Right. But, so I stand out there. And I yelled on, hey, is this where nobody's supposed to go? Oh, my God. They started yelling, you got to get out of there. The demon's up there. Demon's up there. Uh-huh. All right. Whatever. So I end up, going outside, and they're like, what the hell were you thinking going in that building alone? Well, you shouldn't have gone up into the attic. All right. Whatever. So, we finally started to investigate, and the activity there was nothing like they said it was. I mean, the leader, I guess he was, I guess you could say he was an early form of Zach Bagans, where everything is negative, everything is evil, sensationalizing everything. So I watched how this group investigated, and they were just getting like negative reactions. They were getting scratches. They were, growling for the, EVP and all that stuff. Then it was, everybody had to go outside for break because it was, probably about 10 o'clock at night. So it was no longer 130 degrees outside. So while they're outside, I did the whole, well, I got to hit the head again. All right, yeah, go ahead and go to behind the building. So, of course, I sneak in that door again in the back. I went down in the basement that they were getting all this negative stuff, and I tried a completely different approach. Instead of going in there and, just being an ass to whatever was in there, I was just nice to it and talked to whatever was down there like they were a normal person. The EVP that I got were, I didn't mean to do that. I'm so sorry. stuff like that. Went back out. I went back through the building, or went back through the door in the back that I originally went in through, and walked back to the group. And I said, you know what? You want to try something? And they're like, yeah, sure. So I said, instead of going down there into the basement and yelling and screaming and just, you know, acting a fool down there, just start talking to whatever's down there. Just be nice to it. Think of it as, you know, your Uncle Carl or something like that. So we as a group, we went down there. They started asking, you know, asking questions in a normal, not asshole-ish way. So their EVP were a lot nicer. They got the last name of the guy who built this building, and they just had a much better time, and it was a much lighter feel in there. Well, mind you, during this, you know, during our investigation down in the basement, after when they were trying my approach, the leader of the group, he was standing outside. So after, I don't know, we were probably down there for about a half hour. We go back outside and he's like, well, what happened? And like, oh my God, you wouldn't believe it. We just started, you know, talking to the entity down there like he's a normal person. And it's a much lighter feel. There were no scratches and da-da. And he gets all pissed off and he says, oh, it's just tricking you. Mind you, by this time, it's like 3 o'clock in the morning. Uh-huh. And he's just wigging out because he had pretty much hung his hat on this thing's a demon. So I'm going to, I want to be seen in the paranormal field as someone who deals with demons. But it turns out that it's not a demon. So, like I said, he ends up, the leader of this investigation ends up just taking off. He just leaves. So what did we do? I said, you know what? Let's go up to the attic. Let's go up to the attic and speak to whatever's up there the same way you spoke to what was down in the basement. And they were getting a little girl EVP up there. They would, I don't like how the people use the whole, you know, class A, class B, class C EVP thing, but they would be getting probably class B EVP. You can make them out. You could hear that it's a little girl. You could hear that there was no maliciousness in the voice, nothing like that. Yeah, I ended up leaving, going back to the hotel, getting a 3-hour nap, driving 13 hours back and doing another investigation at the prison.
You know, following that story and me doing this for 40 some years, mm-hmm. You know, I've only come across a demon twice in all my whole time. I've had some bad spirits, ornery spirits, you know, but a demon in my dealings only like twice. Mm-hmm. And the worst thing, like you had mentioned, is dealing with a mediocre so-called paranormal investigators that yes. Actually kind of ruin an investigation, or 9 times out of 10 it's not paranormal, or somebody's gonna get hurt.
Exactly,
because you're calling out something you shouldn't be calling out if it's there. Well, I liked about looking at your resume, so to speak. You're labeled as a historian. I like that because it tells me you check the background and care about the history and the person that's dead.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Because my thinking is there's an old saying in the historian clique of people that without the history, it's just a building. Well, the paranormal investigator part of me likes to think of it without the history, it's just an entity. It's just an anomaly. But when you can tie that entity to an event, or actually figure out who it is, now it takes on a whole different, you know, a whole different level to me, because now you are talking, you're almost like time traveling. You're talking to somebody from the past. Yeah, when I was at the prison, I did, let me see, it was probably 15 years of hardcore research on that building. I've got several terabytes of information just on that building, on the history that the people that are there don't even know about.
You were a ghost hunt manager there.
Yes, I was in charge of the ghost hunts, you know, because we had the public ghost hunts, we had the private ghost hunts, essentially whatever the group wanted. Each night, my job was basically the same, but it was different because I would cater to the group's needs. On the private ghost hunts, especially when a group would book the place just for themselves or and their group, I would say, you know, what do you guys want me to do? Do you want me to stay in one location so you know where I am at all times? So if you see somebody walking through the east cell block, you know it's not me. Mm-hmm. Or do you want me to go with you? Or, I mean, it even got to the point where it was like, you know, what do you guys want on the tour? Do you want to know the history? Do you want to know the paranormal stuff? What do you want to know? And I would, you know, alter everything to the needs of that group.
How long were you there?
Oh, man, I was almost 21 years.
I had also seen that you had said that the most important tool you need during an investigation is you.
Exactly. Exactly.
I agree with that 100%.
In my experience, I would rather feel the cold spot or the warm spot instead of seeing it on a thermometer. I would rather feel the hair stand up on my arm rather than seeing my K2 meter go to red.
I know what you're talking about because, you know, because you're not too far from me. And I don't know if you've been to the Hogback Bridge in Hermitage, Pennsylvania.
No, but I think wife and I will end up going there.
they've redone it since I did a documentary like 20 years ago, and they've redone the bridge, and it didn't seem quite the same as like when I was there originally.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
But I've been getting stories from that bridge that are exactly the same stories I had when I did it in 1998, you know. Okay. So, and that was the same thing, man. I had, because I was making that documentary, so I had actors and sound and lighting crew and everybody there. Mm-hmm. And it's like fishing, you know, sometimes you get something and sometimes you don't.
You know, exactly.
At this location with all these like three different stories came in from the same location. And there was nothing, absolutely nothing happening. So it wasn't after I turned off all my equipment and my cameras and had the crew all leave. And I'm standing there, you know, I'm going to stick around and get some more footage down into the gully underneath the bridge and where this witch is supposed to come up, or this girl is supposed to come up on this bridge. Nothing. And I'm walking back up on the bridge, walk back up the hill. And that's when I was pushed from behind.
Nice.
Flicked, my ear flicked, and like a real cold breeze that went through me, and it's like, mm-hmm, 90 degrees outside. So it was like, okay, you know. So I get the same stories even to this day from that bridge. So yeah, I mean, no piece of equipment at all was registering anything, but it was the physical effect I felt.
Mm-hmm. My Mr. Miyagi, seems how you've been in the game for a while and you're from Ohio. My Mr. Miyagi was Dr. Ken Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
He always like pounded into my head, you know, do not let your enthusiasm alter your perception.
Exactly.
So he always pounded that into my head. So here's a story about somebody using equipment and somebody just not using equipment and just experiencing what was going on. So I was up on the, it was the fourth tier in the east cell block. I had a group, I was showing a group of people around, and the leader of the group had, you've probably seen these people with, you know, they'll have their camcorder with, you know, a giant rig on it that as their EMF, their K2, their Zoom recorder, their Tascam, everything. So it was the leader with his giant rig of gizmos and gadgets, and he was taking point. And then there were four people behind him, and then I was bringing up the back. So we're walking down the tier, and he starts saying, "Oh, I'm starting to get something. I'm starting to get something. My K2 is going off. Oh, it's up to orange. It's up to orange. Oh, it's red. It's red." He's waking up because his K2 is going red. And as the four people in front of me and myself are watching a full-blown, full-body apparition walk out of a cell in front of him and walk down the tier. And they're looking back at me like, "Do you see this?" I'm like, "Yeah, I see the guy walking down the tier." But all the leader was concerned about was that his K2 was going red. Mm-hmm. It's like you're completely, you know, missing the forest through the trees.
I just think, you know, sometimes you can have spend all these thousands of dollars on equipment. And if you don't have, you know, how to just use, like you say, your body should be number one. Mm-hmm. And then whatever falls in, long as you're not disrupting the spirit or, you know, the ones around you, you know, I mean, it just, and I've said this before, and sometimes I piss a lot of the other paranormal investigators off, but, you know, I'm not downing the paranormal equipment.
No. There's a place for it.
There's a place for it. But I think the number one rule should be the respect of the building, the respect of the dead.
Exactly.
Because that's who you're contacting.
Yep.
You know, and then your body should be the number one vessel. And then anything after that is an added.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I've noticed is especially new investigators or new ghost hunters, they expect way too much. I mean, they see, you know, everything that's sensationalized on certain TV shows and everything. And they think, you know, within 5 minutes of walking into a building, they should have full body apparitions, you know, slamming doors and having full conversations with them. But just like you said, with the fishing analogy, I like to think of it as hunting. Mm-hmm. Like if you're a deer hunter and you're sitting up in your tree stand, you're not looking for a 350-pound buck tramping through the woods. You're just looking for that little flick of that white from the tail.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are expecting the 350-pound buck to climb up into the tree stand with them and say, "Hey, go ahead and shoot me." But yeah, it's there were a lot of times that people that I was giving a tour to had like super, like just amazing experiences, but it wasn't enough for them because it's not what they thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, a lot of people expect to have the full-blown, full-body apparitions have conversations with them. It doesn't work like that.
Exactly.
So, I mean, the longest, you know...
I mean, how much has changed in the field of investigation that you've seen?
How has it changed? It is way more acceptable than it used to be. Because you remember the days of getting phone calls of, "Hey, I got this phone number from one of my buddies and they say that you sort of like do something." That's the way it used to be. And nowadays it's like, you know, you just Google it and there's a million groups out there. I'm not going to say there's a million good groups out there, but there are a million groups out there. I was actually thinking about what it was like when I first started doing this compared to now, not that long ago. Yes, it's changed, but not near as much as a lot of people think that it has. Yes, it's pop culture now, but you still have the groups out there that they don't care if, you know, you get an amazing piece of evidence. They try to come up with an explanation that is just crazy to disprove it because they didn't get that evidence. Those groups have always been around. Over the past, oh man, I want to say the past short of a decade, I mean, the focus has really turned to the negative. side of things. Just for the simple fact of, well, that's what a lot of the TV shows are showing. And the reason a lot of the TV shows are showing that stuff is because, would you rather watch a show where they capture a two-word EVP of, you know, somebody's Aunt Nellie who died of a stroke? Or would you rather, you know, watch a show where there is a house filled with, you know, demons and stuff like that? So, of course, you know, to get viewers and everything, the TV shows are showing the more negative, the more sensationalized stuff.
Yeah, they want to sell the tickets, you know.
Exactly.
And add more to it than what's there.
Exactly.
I'll be back with the rest of my conversation with Scott Sukol right after these brief messages.
This is Weird on the Rocks, a podcast that explores the weird, unusual, strange, and unexplained, all while getting our drink on. Join me every other Monday as I share a different cocktail and discuss true crime, paranormal stories, unexplained phenomena, conspiracy theories, and much more. Find Weird on the Rocks on social media, the website weirdontherocks.weebly.com, and listen on all of your favorite podcast apps. And don't forget to cheers and stay weird.
How far out from Mansfield do you travel to do, like, I know you said, I seen you went worldwide.
I have been upstate New York. I've been to several places in New York, a lot in Pennsylvania, West Virginia. I've gone out to, for this West, I've gone is like southwestern Iowa. Also another place, if you know what, I wouldn't suggest going to southwestern Iowa during the summertime. There's a location out there that I hit, and it was just killer. Yeah, I'll travel wherever. I'm not proud.
So have you ever been threatened or hurt during an investigation?
I know that I've been scratched up. I have verbally been threatened. Now, see, out of my years, I will not say that I have run into your stereotypical demon. What I have run into stuff that people would consider demons, but I have never run into one. How I look at those entities that people consider demons are, those are just entities or energies that we don't understand. And we just have a bad tendency. If there is something that we don't understand, we try it. It must be bad if we don't understand it.
Right.
Or if you walk into an area and you start feeling like, you know, off kilter, or you get nauseated, or you hear growling or whatever, people automatically think, demon, demon, demon. No. I just think of it as, what the hell is this thing? I have run into numerous things that people would consider demons. Probably the worst. Let me see. I did suffer some pretty negative effects when I was at the prison, just because I was there so much and for so long that I had just absorbed so much of that energy that I wasn't myself. I wasn't, a lot of times I wasn't thinking like myself. I was doing stuff that I normally wouldn't do, and that was just completely out of character for me. So that's probably the worst was the whole, well, I've got a friend, and he volunteered down at the prison when I was at one of my low points. Mind you, this dude had known me for a decade by then. He just looked at me and he says, "Who the hell are you?" I mean, I had changed that much. I left the prison in 2017. Honestly, it took me until probably late summer of last year to feel like myself again. It took that long for all that energy to dissipate out of me. And it was, yeah, I feel better now than I ever have.
It can be dangerous. dealing, if you come close to that, and I've only twice in my career, my lifetime. Yeah, that's only happened twice to me. And I get that close. I don't deal with that. There's experts that can do that. That's not me. I'm not a demonologist.
Yeah.
I see here also that you have worked with celebrities.
Yes.
Well-known celebrities, or?
You could say that, yeah.
And you don't want to, you can't name any of them, right?
No. No. There was probably the first one that I worked with. His manager contacted me because he owned a restaurant, and they were having stuff happen at the restaurant, and this guy wanted to know what was going on because, you know, he had like a lot of turnover in staff because this stuff was happening. So, all right, fine. So I went there, and when I got to the location, there the celebrity was sitting, and I'm like, oh, wow, I've been listening to you since I was a kid. So, yeah, that was cool. That first one.
Was that here in Ohio, or was that outside?
That was in Ohio, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Being from Ohio, I mean, there was a Paranormal Expo in Marietta, Ohio this past weekend.
Yes.
I was going to attend, and due to illness and family, I couldn't make it. But how was that expo? Explain a little bit about what went on there. So it's right on the Ohio River, right across from West Virginia. It's a beautiful little town with a historic hotel, the Lafayette.
Yep.
And tell us a little bit about that one.
Well, the expo was at the Lafayette, and the ladies from Hidden Marietta, they put it on, and they knocked it out of the park. They had some really good speakers, including myself. Mm-hmm. They had your normal paranormal convention type stuff, different vendors and all that, and they had a lot of people there. I'm looking forward to attending it next year as well. It was one of those that you've been to conventions before.
Oh yeah.
So it's like, I hate to say it, but most of the time when you've got a booth, usually by like mid Saturday, you're just done with it. You want to go home and you don't want to talk to anybody else.
Right.
But this one, it went from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. So it's 5 hours long, and it was just constant people. And you didn't even get near that wall of just wanting to, you know, shank people. So it was a good event. And next year, I highly, you know, suggest that people go to it because it was good.
Yeah, I got a hold of a lot of the guests that were there and the speakers to come on my show, and luckily, a lot of them, including yourself, have agreed. So that was cool, you know. And I really wish I would have made it because I've seen the pictures online, and it looked like there was quite a nice turnout.
Oh yeah, a real nice turnout.
Are you fascinated with other things outside of spirits and ghosts? That, like, say UFOs, Bigfoot, cryptids, anything like that?
Not really. I have seen things in the sky that I couldn't explain. A lot of my family actually works for the Federal Aviation Administration. Uh-huh. So they have they let me know that, yeah, there's stuff that shows up on the radar scopes that's not from here.
Since my podcast is on the paranormal, you know, I do everything from the fae to ghosts to UFOs to Loch Ness, mm-hmm, to Bigfoot. I mean, it's a big field. You know, so, and if I spend too much time on UFOs, I hear from my paranormal groups, you know, from the investigators. I can also go back to the ghosts. I do that, and my UFO people, did you hear about the last sighting? You know, so I try to keep everybody happy. But
Well, you want to hear a Bigfoot story?
Mm-hmm.
So me and my Mr. Miyagi, we were called in to do a case, actually not that far from you. Probably north of you. It's like in the Hiram area.
Oh, yeah. It's right north of me, maybe 10 miles.
We were called in because these people, they just felt that there was something, the way they said was something is off here. All right, cool. We go to the house. Nothing. We didn't pick up anything in that house. And they said, well, all these trails that lead from our house, because they had 1, 2, 3, 4 trails that were like spokes from their house. They said, these all used to be roads. Okay, cool. We started walking the trails and we're walking this one trail and it seems like it was like an old railroad bed because it was like a drop off and then it was like swamp for as far as you can see. And then on the other side of the swamp, probably, I'd say about 300 feet, there was like a cliff, probably about probably 75-foot cliff. So mind you, this is all in the middle of the night. And, you know, while we were out on a different trail, we were getting some pretty good EVP out there. So I had my recorder running. Ken had his recorder going. And all of a sudden, you hear like a splash in the water in the swamp area. All right, cool. Probably a beaver. And then the next one was a little bit closer. And then the next one, you could actually hear something being thrown through the treetops and then landing in the water. Mm-hmm. I've got this all recorded. And then the next one, I'm like, dude, I don't think that's a beaver. And Ken's like, nope, that's not a beaver. Because the last one landed probably, I'd say probably 12 to 15 foot away from us because it splashed us. Just like the other ones, you could hear, the only thing we could think of was a rock. And it had to be a rock that was probably 10 inches being thrown through the treetops towards us. Ken's like, well, we're here looking for ghosts and I think we found Bigfoot. And that just completely made sense. So we go back to the house and we tell the people what we experienced. And she's like, oh, yeah, we find twisted off trees back on that trail all the time. Okay, yeah, it was Bigfoot.
I just got a story from Bigfoot just a couple of days ago and you don't hear too much about that in Ohio.
Yeah.
It's really popular out in Minnesota and Oklahoma mm-hmm. and Nebraska, you know, but here, not so much. But I got one from down in that area by Sugar Creek.
Yeah.
And they gave me the location. I'm going to try to find that. I got so much stuff to go to this summer. I think my wife's going to kill me. You know, she's not really into the paranormal per se. You know, she don't believe in it. It scares her. You know, that's why I get she has a cross by my, as I'm speaking now. So I try to keep myself protected.
Mm-hmm. My wife and I, we collect a bunch of what people would consider like oddities and curiosities, and one of my big things is Victorian Catholic stuff. So I see right now probably about 20, 25 like crosses.
You said that you worked with the Catholic Church. What did you do?
The first time it was back in the day, and it was one of those phone calls of, hi, this is Cardinal so-and-so from the Archdiocese of, I forgot, he was out of Chicago. And he says, I got your phone number from somebody who says you do this one thing. And I'm like, oh, okay, I think I know what you're talking about. And he says, well, a couple of the fathers have a case not that far from you, and they're having issues. Would you be willing to assist them? And I said, Cardinal, I don't mean to be rude or anything like this, but why are you contacting a chubby, bald farm guy from the middle of Ohio to help the Catholic Church with a case? Because you're the Catholic Church. You're supposed to be the end all be all. Uh-huh. And he said, well, son, not everything out there is Catholic. So he gave me an address for a location. When I got there, there were the two assistants, and then there was the main exorcist. It was really weird because it was in an apartment in a very bad neighborhood. Essentially, he gave me the address, didn't tell me what apartment or anything, just you'll know where it is. So I go to the apartment complex. There's one building. You hear this woman just screaming. And I'm like, that must be it. So I go up there, front door of the apartment's open. I just walk right in because I hear the ceremony going on in this one room. So I walk in there. The assistant priests, they acknowledge my presence. I look around the main exorcist because his back was to me. There is this young boy. I find out he's 3 years old, severely autistic. And he is levitating out of his bed between 8 and 10 inches. Yeah.
Yeah. Whenever you contact or you want to contact the dark side and you want to do it for fun and you want to go through some of these folklores and you're playing with fire. And I do know that a lot of your Catholic priests don't even, they won't deal with it. Keep in mind, these guys are men just like we are, you know?
Yep.
And I do believe that you have to be highly trained in that.
And, oh, yeah.
And your faith better be pretty doggone strong, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's something you don't want to mess with. And that's, I do warn a lot of people out there, don't mess with something you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, a lot of people, they'll carry holy water with them and all that stuff for protection. And the thing is, it's not the object that protects you. It's your faith in that object. Mm-hmm. I don't care if, you know, you worship a dog turd. A dog turd, if you truly believe that it will protect you, it will protect you.
Well, you know, it's been my pleasure having you on the show tonight, man. Where can people contact you to do an investigation or know more about you?
Oh, just look me up on Facebook, just Scott Sukel, S-U-K-E-L. And that's about it. I don't have any, website or anything like that. I don't try to go out and promote myself or anything because there's a lot of people who promote themselves, and I'm just not that kind of guy.
Well, Scott, it's been my pleasure having you on, man. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been a great time.
I want to thank Scott Sukel for coming on the show tonight. It was truly my pleasure. It's always great having somebody from my neck of the woods here in Ohio. Thank you, Scott. I really do appreciate that. I'll see you in 2 weeks with another great episode on Ghosts in the Valley podcast.